The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Every once in a while, you got to come to the understanding that hope needs a little help. Those are the words of my guest today on the Michael Steele podcast, Tavis Smiley. He's an entrepreneur, broadcaster, advocate, best-selling author, and one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. He's also host of Tavis Smiley, which airs weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific on KBLA Talk 1580. You're going to enjoy this conversation. We go a little bit deep and we go a little bit broad. So get yourself together and settle in for my conversation with Tavis Smiley right here on the Michael Steele podcast next. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm excited to have this brother in the chair because typically I'm in his chair as he's interviewing me. And now I get the chance to share some love back with my friend Tavis Smiley. Welcome, brother, to the podcast, man. It's good to have you.
Man, I'm delighted to be on and delighted to be had. So it's a good thing. You're right. I have been honored so many times over the years to have you in my chair on my TV show, my radio show. And so I look forward to this conversation on your platform. And thank you for the invitation, my friend.
Nah, absolutely, man. I have always admired you from back in the day, through Howard University and the various platforms you've been showcased on. The one thing I've always said about Tavis Smiley is he's one of the realest brothers in this space who has a conversation, who doesn't cut corners and ain't trying to impress. He's just like, dude, tell me the truth. Don't lie, because I got receipts on you. so don't think you're gonna sit in my chair and come incorrect. And I've always appreciated that about you.
I appreciate that. That's kind of you. I try to do my research obviously to prepare for the conversations that I have, but ultimately I think part of what's wrong with our world is that people are really craving transparency. They're craving authenticity, and it is increasingly difficult in a world where people are, how might I put it, not just skeptical but cynical. I believe, and I've always believed, Michael, that skepticism is healthy. Cynicism is dangerous.
Yeah.
But I fear that we live in a world now where people are far more cynical than they are just skeptical. And in that space, it becomes, I think, all the more important to be transparent, to be authentic, and, you know, like me or loathe me, love me or hate me, agree or disagree. I've always said from the outset of my career, you know, a few decades ago, that I wanted to do two things, to commit myself to being to doing two things. One, to standing in my truth. I believe at our best, our lives ought to be about seeking the truth, speaking the truth, and standing on the truth. And that doesn't mean that I have a monopoly on the truth. I mean, I recognize there is the truth and there is the way to the truth. Some folks just ain't got there yet. So you can't be arrogant because they don't know the truth that you know. I do believe, though, that when you know the truth, you are obligated to tell it. You're obligated to share it. You're obligated to say what it is that you see. But again, with humility, knowing that you could be wrong. So I've committed myself for all these years, one, to trying to be a truth teller. And number two, being my authentic self. Now, it's a little easier to be authentic if you're operating in a particular space. Say, for example, if you're on BET, if you're on BET where my career started and you're Black, well, it's a little easier to be authentic on BET.
Right.
If you're on Tom Joyner, if you're on Tom Joyner where my radio career started, it's a little easier to be authentically Black when you're talking to Black folk. But when you pop up on MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times and all these other platforms that you've been that you've appeared in for the for years, and the platforms that I've appeared in for years, in those spaces you have to also be authentic and transparent. So I said to myself years ago that I'm like Popeye. I am what I am. That's all that I am. And wherever I show up, I want to be transparent. I want to be truthful. I want to be my authentic self. And that's what I've tried to do.
Well, you do it admirably, sir. And it is a model for a lot of folks in journalism in particular to follow. And it's something, this is a new space for me to break into coming out of politics. And I tell people, I don't pretend to be a journalist. I don't want to be a journalist. Mm-hmm. That's not my lane. I know my lane. But a lot of folks today, speaking to what you say about authenticity and truth, a lot of people don't do that, which is why I think the public in large measure has been confused. I give you Fox News, which has transgressed from, delivering the news, being fair and balanced, to becoming a bullhorn for authoritarianism, for election denying. How does, looking broadly across the landscape and sort of assessing where the public is, one aspect of this, Tavis, for me is a lot of those things, those that sort of break down in trust and authenticity in the media space has really made it a lot easier and in some respects given permission to citizens to not trust the news they hear, to go off and find alternative sources which aren't quite honest, to be honest about it, as reliable and as much into the truth-telling. How do we course correct for that? How do we course correct for those enterprises out there? And their numbers are growing, which disseminate lies, disseminate alternative facts, alternative narratives that are creating sort of an Earth 2, Earth 3 when it comes to everyday, obviously verifiable facts. And yet people seem to get sucked into that Earth 1, Earth 2, Earth 3 environment.
Yeah, it's a powerful question, and it's a question that is worthy of interrogation. This might not be the answer you want to hear, but I'll give you the answer, and then I'll try to unpack it for you as best I can. Your question was, how do we course correct? And my answer is, I'm not sure we can.
That's fair.
I'm sure that's not the answer. That's not the answer you want to hear. But here's why I say I'm not altogether confident that we can. A few reasons, right? Quick. Number one, because what I said a moment ago, that we live in a world where politically, culturally, socially, even economically, if I had time, I could make the point that people are just more cynical. We just live in a world where people are no longer skeptical of our politics. They're just downright cynical about it. And I don't know in a space that is rampant with that kind of cynicism, you can so easily course correct, number one. Because when you start to course correct, then they start to question why you're changing, why you're doing this.
Right.
Because that's what cynicism does. It disbelieves everything. Every move you make, those who are cynics see it as there's an ulterior motive behind it. So one, I think we've crossed the line again from skepticism to cynicism, and I think that makes it difficult to course correct, number one. Number two, it makes it difficult to course correct because with regard to the media specifically, everybody's chasing clicks. They're chasing, yep. they're chasing clicks and they're chasing likes. It was the case back in the day, and I mean way back in the day, that what we were chasing in the news media ostensibly was the truth. But now, as someone famously said in the Trump era, there are alternative facts. and the media plays this game of feeling like they have to give you both sides of the story when sometimes there ain't two sides to the story. There's the truth and there's the lie.
Right.
But the media bends over backwards too often to try to always give you two sides of the story when the other side is just it's not just wrong. It can be unethical. It can be immoral. It could have no truth connected to it whatsoever. But they feel this penchant to have another voice, an alternative view on the program. And so in that regard, the media is bending over backwards to try to accommodate, you know, a frame that I think is wrong. But ultimately what they're chasing are clickbait. They're chasing likes. And so if you're not chasing the truth, but you're chasing clickbait, you're chasing clicks rather, you're chasing likes instead, I'm not sure that gets you to a place where you can be serious about what it's really going to require to course correct. And the third thing I would offer as, you know, my evidence for why I think the course correction will not be easy if it comes at all, and that is that we live in a world where those who are making decisions, those who are in charge of trying to lead us, lie to us routinely.
Right.
They lie routinely. And
that
and the media doesn't, and the media doesn't do a good enough job of calling out those lies.
Yeah.
And so we've seen it get a little bit better in terms of calling out the lies about Donald Trump in particular. But let's just be clear. Donald Trump ain't the only one who lies. He ain't the only politician. He ain't the only leader who's lying. And I just don't know that our machine, the media machine, is built in a way where it either cares enough or has the resources enough to chase down all of these lies. And so those would be my three reasons. I could give more, but those are three reasons why I think that if in fact there's ever going to be a course correction with regard to the mainstream media. And then I would add one other point. And I could have started with this. And let's face it, you and I both are guilty of, you know, of participating as guests and as moderators and as hosts and as contributors in the corporate media space.
Yeah.
But I'm also willing to talk about being transparent and authentic and truthful. I am concerned about the corporate media space in which we are having this conversation. There are really just two or three companies that own and control everything we see or read, basically.
That's
it. I mean, you have to really work hard to find some legitimate to the brilliant point you made earlier. You have to really make an effort to find alternative, trustworthy news sources that don't belong under the umbrella of two or three people that own and control pretty much everything we read. So I have spent, as you know, a good part of my career, I spent some years in the corporate media space, but most of my career has been in the public media space. And
right.
That doesn't mean that public media is right 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I've just found that in the public media space or in the space I'm in now as an independent owner of my own talk station, I've just found that being in the independent space or the public media space allows me a bit more freedom, a bit more leverage, a bit more leeway to be as truthful as I think I need to be. But when you're in that corporate space, those pressures, those headwinds can be pretty intense. And that's another reason I'd submit for why course correction isn't going to be easy. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I actually would agree with your 3-point assessment and especially that the addendum, the last point you made about the nature of the corporate media influence on it all. You have, in one sense, and what confirms what you're saying is what you look at as the demise of those independent news sources that we've grown up with, right? Whether it's in the black media space, you know, black owned newspapers and outlets, or even in the more public space of local news like the Gazettes and the Tribunes that existed in a time. You now have that ability, though, as you rightly noted, having carved out sort of the landscape for yourself in owning your own news source. You every day from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. on KBLA, have an opportunity to have that conversation, talk 1580, right? Local, you know, close and personal conversation with listeners out there. What are you hearing back in that feedback from them about how they're assessing the information they're getting? And do they do they recognize, oh, I'm getting punked here and want to move off of that? Or is there a level of gullibility that even in the space you're in, you hear and see when you talk to your listeners?
Great question. So a couple answers. Number one, so talk radio in this country, you know this as well as I do, talk radio in this country really does drive the opinions that so many millions of fellow citizens derive and come up on every day.
Right.
Rush Limbaugh is now deceased. And Rush was, you know, depending on how one looks at this, the best at this. But it's no surprise to you that people who listen to talk radio form their opinions by what they hear every day for hours. And so talk radio has a huge impact. Let's just call it what it is. Talk radio in this country has a much more significant impact on the views and opinions of fellow citizens than the network news does every night. There's no question about it.
Agreed.
People draw their opinions. They form their own ideas based on what they hear from these talk radio hosts, literally from California to the Carolinas.
And, Tavis, can I say real quick on that point, just so folks understand exactly the point you're making? Don't think that what Tavis is saying is exclusively the purview of, quote, conservative talk radio. It is a broad spectrum of talk radio out there. I would not cast my friend as a conservative talk show host, right? That's not Tavis's lane. So to his point, we're talking of the influence is a broad spectrum of influence from the progressive side to the more conservative side, which is what you see playing out every day.
I accept that. I totally agree. I'd only add to that. With that said, given the way the talk radio is structured in this country at the moment, it is significantly, though, a what I call a conservative citadel.
Agreed.
There are progressive voices out there, but you recall years ago, Air America didn't work so well. It didn't last so long when they tried that more progressive, more liberal thing. So the talk radio in this country is a conservative citadel. Back to my point, people make the decisions. They form their opinions based on what they hear every day on talk radio. So that to answer your question about what I'm hearing, and again, our station KBLA Talk 1580, you can find all of our platforms and socials at KBLA 1580. We're unique because talk radio is this, again, this behemoth, this massive industry. And yet, Michael, across the country with thousands and thousands of talk radio stations, only five are Black owned in the entire country. One, two, three, four, five.
Wow.
In the area where you are, Baltimore, in the D.C. Baltimore area, you've got, you know, WOL, WOLB that you know well in the D.C. area. We'll count those as one or two stations. You've got WBON in Chicago. You've got WURD in Philadelphia. You've got WBOK in New Orleans. And we, KBLA, are the only one west of the Mississippi.
Dang.
That's how scarce Black-owned and operated talk radio is in this country. So what I'm attempting to do long-term, just to pivot for a second, I'll come back. Sure. Long-term, I'm attempting with my investors to buy other stations across the country. And for the first time ever, to build a Black-owned and operated talk radio network. But we've started with KBLA in Los Angeles, and I'm grateful that my particular show every day that you referenced earlier, thank you, that particular show is now syndicated across the country. So we're syndicated in markets all across the country. So my show is heard everywhere. But thanks to our app and our website and all the other tools that we have, our station really, although based in LA, is a national station with a huge national audience. My point, though, is that we're cutting against the grain every day because talk radio is a conservative citadel. We're cutting against the grain. So what am I hearing? What I'm hearing is a deep level of gratitude on the part of African-American listeners and progressive listeners that even in a city that brands itself progressive, like Los Angeles does, until we showed up, Michael, there was only conservative talk radio, even in LA.
Wow.
Even in Los Angeles.
Wow.
We only have conservative talk radio stations. There was no progressive commercial talk radio station in this city. And so here we show up, and there's a survey that's done every year here in Southern California. And I'll close on this note on this point. A company called Eviterus, an independent polling firm.
Mm-hmm.
And for the second consecutive year, now keep in mind, we've only been in business 2 years. Our third anniversary is not until Juneteenth. I figure if I'm going to own a black station, I might as well launch it on Juneteenth.
There you go, baby.
On Juneteenth.
That's how you do it.
I launched it on Juneteenth of 2021. So every year on Juneteenth, it's our birthday. So
Juneteenth
of this year will be our third anniversary. But for two consecutive years, and we've only been on the air, again, for 2 years, KBLA Talk 1580 has been found in an independent survey to be, and this is their word, their language, the most trusted, the most credible, and the most reliable news source, not just talk radio. Got the LA Times and everything else in this city, in this Southern California. But we are the most trusted, credible, and reliable news source for African Americans and others for 2 years running. Now, my point simply is that, to answer your question, people find us to be trustworthy, credible, and reliable because they know that we're talking about the things that matter to them. We're doing it with people who they know and they trust, people who understand their experiences, who understand their fears, their dreams, their hopes, their angst, their aspirations, so that we're talking to people in a way that they understand, that they appreciate, and that they welcome. And so the short point of this long story, is simply this, that the black press and the black media, and for that matter, independent media, no matter what color it is more important now up against the corporate media than ever before. Why? Because we don't have a particular agenda. And there are some issues that don't get raised if we don't raise them. Some questions that don't get asked if we don't ask them. Some persons that don't get profiled if we don't profile them. And so if you build it, as they say, they will come and they will appreciate the fact that there is a source out there that's addressing the things that matter to them. And it's not about the clickbait. It's not about the subscribers. It's fundamentally about giving you information that will help you make better choices and live better lives.
And that's why I started our conversation the way I did, as a reference point for folks who are part of my listening family to understand why I have such admiration for this brother, because that's Tavis consistently across the board. It's from my first engagement with you to this very moment, that thread that you just laid out there for us has been why I never questioned coming on a program with you. It was never, oh my God, this is going to be a hit job. This is going to be, you know, right versus left and all of that. And I think that's something right now in this era of MAGA, this era of doubt, this era of white nationalism, the inability of African-Americans to tell their true story without it being pulled off a bookshelf or stricken from a school curriculum, is why voices like yours and what you're doing are important. So what I want to do, I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to delve into some of the issues you're confronting with your listeners as we all are on the same landscape heading into this presidential election and in local elections in light of what we saw play out in New York's third congressional district with the election of Mr. Swoza last night in New York. More with Tavis Smiley right after this.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics compromise, and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm having a great conversation with my buddy Tavis Smiley, and we're talking about, as we went to break, talking about what his listeners are bringing to him around the things that they're looking for when they turn on the news, when they turn on his program on KBLA Talk 1580, what they're interested in hearing. And Tavis, you talked about as we were going to break some of the, you know, the issues that you try to get into with your audience. What are they telling you are the issues? Now, I would bet that top of mind for them are not the age of the current president of the United States, but folks on my side of the aisle want that to be the conversation. And even some mm-hmm. among progressives express their concern about that and saying, oh, Biden should come off the ticket and someone else should take his place. But I suspect for a lot of Americans, they've sort of baked into their minds, this is going to be Biden, Trump again. And now they want to focus on how they're going to process that relative to issues around what we see happening in Europe, gas prices at the gas station down the street, the grocery store that they have to go to this weekend. What are they talking to you about right now?
It's a great question. As you well know, Tip O'Neill famously said many, many years ago, former Speaker of the House, that all politics is local, that all politics is local. So I don't, it doesn't so much matter to me who you're talking to. I happen to have a national platform with a program that's heard across the country in syndication. So whether the people I'm talking to are in Philadelphia, Chicago, New Orleans, you know, DC, New York, wherever we are heard, the issues are basically the same when you're talking to progressive voters, liberal voters, Democratic voters, certainly African-Americans, people of color. All politics is local. Yep. They do care about the direction. They do care about the direction and the future of this country. I think most of us are now willing to acknowledge that our democracy is fragile. The democracy is very fragile. And many people, I think, see in connection to that, that we are being called upon. Certainly African-Americans have been called upon time and time again. You and I are sitting for this conversation. It's not lost on me in February, Black History Month. Mm-hmm. And I still ain't figured out how we chose the shortest and coldest month of the year to celebrate such a rich cultural heritage. But I digress on that point. But Du Bois, the great Du Bois, the great Black intellectual, W.B. Du Bois, the first African American, as you know, to receive a PhD from Harvard.
That's it.
Du Bois once asked this question, Michael: would America have been America without her Negro people? That's Du Bois. Would America have been America without her Negro people? Now, you and I both know the answer is a resounding no.
Yep.
And I think you can say that honestly and transparently without demonizing or casting aspersion on any other group of people. But if you take Black folk out of the American democratic experiment, brother, it just falls flat.
It does.
If you take us out of the American democratic experiment, it just falls flat. So that Black people in particular have been called upon time and time again to save this democracy in every war, in the civil rights era, in Reconstruction. I could go all day long on this. We have been called upon repeatedly to save this democracy, and oftentimes to save this democracy from itself. Mm-hmm. So here we are once again. I'm answering your question. What am I hearing from my listeners? They understand that in this critical moment and this in late modernity, in the American democratic experiment, they understand that they're being called upon yet again to help save this democracy from authoritarianism,
yep.
Save this democracy from anarchy. I told some folk the other day, Michael, and I think you'll appreciate this given your political pedigree. I tell people, I said the other day that people keep saying, and the White House says it, and Biden says it, everybody says it, but the frame is a little bit off. Everybody keeps reminding reminding the nation and saying to Black people in particular, as they ask for their votes again this election, they keep saying that Black people saved Joe Biden's candidacy, that Black women in particular saved Joe Biden's candidacy. And I tell people, well, that's partially true. But let's just tell the whole story. Black folk didn't just save Joe Biden's candidacy. When they saved his candidacy, they saved the democracy. We didn't just save his candidacy. We saved the democracy.
There you go. Yeah. Complete the sentence.
Yeah, complete the sentence, man. So the question, though, is, again, what I'm hearing from my audience, the question, though, is, what do Black folk in particular get? In particular, Michael, what do we get for saving this democracy from itself time and time again? And the answer to that is not much.
Not much.
You can't get a serious conversation about reparations. You can't get voting rights passed, meaningful voting rights bill passed through the Senate. You can't get meaningful police reform measures passed through the Senate. I'll stop here and answer your question. What am I hearing? What I'm hearing is a great deal of angst, a great deal of concern about what we get for saving this democracy every time. They always come back to us. And we still end up essentially being on the outside looking in, no matter what we do to save this democracy from itself. So people are not so put off that they're going to just write off the political process. I know there's many who are so frustrated they're not even going to vote. And
yeah.
I'm talking to those folks every day about why they need to engage and involve themselves in the process. But I'll close with this. That old line that, you know, that we've been saying for years, Michael, that the two most important days in your life are Election Day and Judgment Day.
Right.
And your vote is your voice, and your ancestors died for you to have the right to vote. I can tell you right now, brother, that stuff ain't working no more.
No.
That stuff is not working anymore. We got to come with something better than that. If we're gonna inspire people and motivate them to turn out in the most important election of your lives, November of 2024, we got to come up with a better narrative. I'm not sure I know the answer. You're the former chair. You may have a better answer than I do, but I can tell you right now, those lines are not working. And that's the stuff I'm hearing from my audience.
Yeah, no, I think your audience is spot on. Those lines aren't working because those lines are now, for many, many African Americans, a lie. And they refuse to buy into the lie that, you know, there is some benefit to doing as they are requested to do. The irony for me is that, you know, there's history is replete with those moments and efforts to keep African Americans from the ballot box, including the present day. At the same time, you have political leaders trying to find ways to get African Americans to vote and participate to save their behind from themselves. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You strip away the voting rights that we have, not enshrined in the Constitution, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Separate legislation in 64 and 65 to give us access to the ballot box and to, in some way, encapsulate our civil rights. And now here we are in this 21st century having the Supreme Court basically say, y'all don't need those. And then we look at what the states are doing. So, and then you come and say, but we need you to come out and vote. Well, how do I trust a system that's trying to tell me in the same breath, my vote has very little value and certainly very little value worth protecting, but yet still you need me to come out and vote. And so, and that really kind of got to the heart for me. I don't know if you watched the special with Trymaine Lee and Charles Coleman Jr. On MSNBC, which, you know, raised some controversy, how African-Americans, particularly Black men, you know, participate in this process. You know, they're special sort of focused on, you know, Black men in America, the road to 2024, and what that means, what that means, that intersection of society, race, and culture for Black men, who, right. as a lot of focus and emphasis has been placed on Black women, Black men are now, at least in some polling, saying, yeah, you know, maybe I'll look at Trump. How do you read the narrative relative to Black men in this conversation?
Yeah, it's another great question. And I'll just say this. This is pretty straightforward and simple for me. I think that a lot of times in these conversations, we take our eyes off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Put another way, we major in the minors. We major in the minors.
Yes.
We're not focused on what really matters here. So what I mean by that in this instance is that everybody, you know, falls for the banana in the tailpipe. We focus in on the headline, Black men voting for Trump. Okay, I get that. I get the headline. But let's dig a little deeper, though. Let's dig a little deeper. The real question for me is, why would any segment of the African-American population consider voting for someone who has consistently pushed an agenda that is antithetical to their best interest?
Makes no sense to me.
There you go. I'm going to say it again. Why would any particular segment, any segment of the Black community, the Black voting bloc, consider voting for someone who has pushed an agenda that is antithetical to their interest? I agree with you. It makes no sense to me. But let's take it another step. As you said earlier, complete the sentence. See, that really ain't the question. That's the first question.
Right.
The real question is, how desperate must you really be? Mr. Chairman, are you with me now? Are you with me?
I am, brother. I am so with you. I'm on the other side of you.
how desperate must you be?
Oh my goodness!
To even consider that as an option. How desperate must you be to take ammunition, put it in the gun, and put it to your head? Because that's exactly what you're doing. So, and that's the question that nobody wants to wrestle with. We're all titillated by the headline of Black men and Donald Trump. We're titillated by that. But nobody really wants to wrestle with the most urgent question. And that urgent question is the one that you and I just were laughing about, but it ain't funny. Which is how desperate must you be to even consider that as an option? And so here's my point. When you ask that question, and here's why, I can tell you why I said rhetorically, I can give you a real answer. I can tell you why don't nobody want to wrestle with that question. Because to wrestle with that question is an indictment on the Democratic Party.
Yep. There
it's
we
an
go.
Indictment on the Biden White House.
Yeah.
It's an indictment on I'll stop. You take my point, though, do you not?
I do. And that to me, you just laid it out. And it's funny, as I was listening to you, I was having a flashback to one of our early conversations on your show. I remember sitting in those, in sort of like those little space chairs that you used to have when you're set. I can still see it. I can still see it. And you're asking me about why should Black folks even consider the Republican Party? Because I think I was coming out of my chairmanship, or just left my chairmanship of the party. And I was making the case around some of the bigger policy differences and some of the other things where, you know, relating back to history and, you know, kind of like, I can't make that case today because the interests of this party as it's currently iterated under MAGA is antithetical to our interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
When you rationalize fine people on both sides, when you rationalize shithole countries, when you rationalize the Blacks or my Black, I don't see how you can make that case. And I certainly can't make that case when the response of a Black man, a United States senator running for the presidency, capitulates to Trump by saying, "I just love you, man. I as a black man, I can't rationalize that interest." And so it really, the point you make as and as two black men discussing this, for me is, hey, I don't get it. How do you make that leap and go, okay, yeah. I mean, look, I get it. You know, you may think you may buy this whole macho thing and the machismo and all of that. But at the end of the day, you got to stack that up with what's in your family's interest. What's in your mama and your daddy's interest? What's in your sister's interest?
That's right.
What's in your community's interest? And seemingly some folks aren't doing that, Tavis.
No. As you were talking, you're making a powerful point. And as you were talking, something just popped in my head because you kept using that word interest to make your point. And I don't know why this came in my head just now, Michael, because I hadn't thought about it in years. But I don't know if you recall the motto for years of the Congressional Black Caucus, but I'll tell you and your audience. For years, the motto of the Congressional Black Caucus has been, hear me now, no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interest.
Yep.
That's been their motto. No permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interest. Now put a pin in that for a second. Your friend and my friend, Cornel West, who's now running for president as an independent.
Yep.
He and I were talking, you know, some years ago, we talk all the time. We were talking one night for dinner. Actually, we were in New York, as a matter of fact, sitting at a cafe until 3 o'clock in the morning, just talking about this. I'll never forget as long as I live. And he, as only a philosopher of his brilliance can do, just really ripped to shreds intellectually that formulation. No permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interests. What I can tell you in short, given our time, about my takeaway from that conversation, he is just completely just dismantling that, is that it's too parochial. It's too parochial.
Mm-hmm.
And what it speaks to is whatever your personal project is.
Right.
Or whatever matters to you. So it ain't about permanent friends. It ain't about permanent interests. It's about no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interest. So anyway, in other words, does your agenda fit my interest?
Right.
Is what you're doing good for me?
Yes.
Is what you're doing going to help advance my project? And you understand now intellectually why Cornel West started to just dismantle that thing for me in this conversation. And by the time he got done 3 hours later, I totally got it and I was on his side. And I've never used that phrase since then. The point I'm making here is to bring this full circle. What you and I are talking about is two black men, about the way some black men are considering Donald Trump. Again, we said earlier, how desperate must you be to even consider that? Who disenfranchised you so much? Who made you feel so disavowed? Who made you feel so disaffected that you didn't even consider doing something stupid like that? How desperate must things be for you? And who made you feel that way? But the other frame, which we're talking about now, is if the way you see the world is not about permanent friends and not about permanent enemies, but only permanent interests, and all you care about is aligning with somebody whose agenda is going to help you, well, now you're back to the Michael Steele point. But what about your mama? What about your grandma?
Right.
What about your kids? What about your family, your neighborhood, your community? But that frame of no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interests, ain't just something that works for the CBC. I think you take my point. We got a whole lot of fellow citizens who are using that same frame
to make their own
decisions, if that makes sense at all.
Before I let you get up out of here, man, we could go deeper, folks. Trust me. I could go deeper on this point. So everything we've talked about right now is sort of a backdrop of how you're looking at, I'm looking at this 2024 cycle, as the presidential election approaches. We saw the election in New York last night yield a different result from what even a lot of pundits thought or expected. The race was not as close as they thought it would be. And that the reality of it was that citizens did have a different take on what they thought the outcome should ultimately be, that they were not going to give up on this democracy by electing someone who was not in line or in the right frame relative to our community interests, right? And what was best for us. How are you right now approaching, as you host the Tavis Smiley Show, how are you approaching your audience? Are you changing that approach in light of the gravity of this cycle, in light of what, because you have a very strong resonance in the Black community. Are you changing any of that? Are you reframing any of that? How are you looking through this lens and calculating how do it's pretty much how we started the conversation. How do I reach folks? How do I, in listening to them, relate back to them something that they need to know about the urgency of this moment?
It's a great place to close. It's a powerful question. The late great Barbara Jordan once said that every one of us wants to live in a nation that will one day be as good as its promise.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tavis now opining on that. Nobody's asking for more, and no fellow citizen deserves any less. But we all want to live in a nation that will one day be as good as its promise. I call America, Michael, an experiment in democracy. I could call it an oligarchy. I could call it a plutocracy. I call it an experiment in democracy because I believe that we have a Madisonian framework for democracy, but we ain't quite there yet. So I call it a beautiful experiment in democracy. We're trying to work our way toward that, but we ain't perfected it yet, much less the arrogance that we have trying to export it around the globe. That's another conversation for another time. But we are an experiment in democracy and we're working toward it. But one day, we want to live in a nation that will be as good as its promise. What I'm saying to my audience is simply this. We're not there yet because there's a huge gulf, there's a huge divide still between the promise of America and the possibilities in America for all of our fellow citizens. And too many of us are on the wrong side of that equation. The promise is one thing, but the possibilities are something else. And we have to shrink that gap between the promise and the possibility. I repeat what I said earlier, that here we are once again being called upon to save this democracy. And at every time in American history where we've been called upon to do it, we've shown up. There's no doubt in my mind that at our best, Black folk have always been the conscience of this country.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes through interposition, sometimes through nullification, sometimes through amendment, sometimes through protest. Yep. We've used all of the tools in our toolbox. But every time we're called upon to fix what's wrong with America, we've stepped up to help save this democracy. And whether you like it or not, you are being called upon and recruited one more again. You've been recruited one more again to help save this democracy from authoritarianism, from anarchy, and from just imploding. My read of history suggests to me that there is no empire in the history of the world that at some point did not have a reckoning. Every empire at some point has a reckoning. And we got to get off this thing of American exceptionalism, which leads us to believe that we're so great, we're so all that, God bless America, and I guess he's damning everybody else. We have this arrogance about us that doesn't even let us consider, Michael, how close to the edge we really are.
Yeah.
And the only hope, the primary hope to your brilliant frame that you put us in, and I'll close on this note, the hope that I take away from the example you offered last night about this election and the result is simply this. A couple years ago, everybody was predicting, as we say in my neighborhood, everybody a couple of years ago was predicting a big red wave.
Yeah.
That did not happen.
That's right.
And last night is another example, another exhibit that what they are predicting just might not turn out. But we can't, you know, we can't just sit back and hope that that doesn't happen. Hope needs help. And we are the help that hope needs. And in this moment, I'm saying to my audience that it is your responsibility. It is your duty to do everything you can, as imperfect as this democracy is, help save it one more again. And that's all I got for you, Michael Steele.
That, and look, and I'll put a coda on that, and we don't need to storm the Capitol to do it.
There you go. There you go.
Tavis smiling. There's a reason why, folks, the New York Times called him 100 most influential people in the world. And I think we got a good taste of why that is. Tavis, I really appreciate you coming by and sharing in this conversation and giving us some insight. I, you know, as I was thinking about where to go with this, I was like, well, we can get into all the nitty gritty of court cases and politics and all of that. But every once in a while, it's just important to sort of take a step back and assess the land that we're standing on and where the pieces, where the dirt is and where the rocks are. And I really appreciate you sort of zooming us out a little bit and looking more broadly at all of this and really sharing with us what you're hearing out there across the country as your listeners tune into you and share their thoughts. So I really appreciate that.
No, it's my great honor. I've never called you. I've said this about you many times, obviously outside of your presence. But I'll say it to you, to your audience. I've never called upon you ever when you did not respond affirmatively to my invitation to join me for whatever the conversation was. At times, you knew the questions are always fair, but sometimes the questions had some heat on them.
Oh yeah.
You've never run from those questions. You never run from my invitation. And I believe, again, that's what is going to help save this democracy, that people who don't always see every little thing the same way have got to be unafraid of engaging in dialogue. In America, there's too much monologue these days and not enough dialogue.
Amen to that.
And you've never run away from the dialogue. And so for your courage, for your conviction, for your commitment, but mostly for your character, I am deeply appreciative to you and for you. And I'll just close by saying, I love you and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
Well, I love you too, brother. And look, guess what? I ain't afraid of a little hot sauce. So, you know, just.
There you go.
Just keep bringing, put a little hot sauce on it. Tavis Smiley is one of the best out there, folks. Please take a moment and tune in to Tavis Smiley. Every weekday from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific on KBLA Talk 1580. You're going to hear a good conversation. You're going to learn. You're going to appreciate what makes this man a great voice, not just in the African-American community, but in communities across the United States. I'm really, really delighted to have him on. Follow him on X, Twitter, whatever Elon's calling it these days. At Tavis Smiley. And don't forget to show us some love here at the Michael Steele Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Steele_podcast, me at Michael Steele. Show some love by downloading this episode and all episodes to share with your friends and family. Until next time, y'all, be safe, be well, take care of one another, because y'all gonna need each other. Trust me, y'all gonna need each other. Take care.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.